Hi, welcome back to Books and Broomsticks. I'm Chaotic Witch Aunt.
And I'm Matt Hatter Plays.
And today we have a very special guest with us. Lisa, please introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm Lisa Fazio. I am the founder of The Root Circle, which, what is The Root Circle? It started out as sort of herbal education. And I'm an herbalist. That's my main, I guess, title or identity is as an herbalist. I've been an herbalist for 30 years. I've been studying and practicing herbs. I had a clinical practice for, I don't know, 15 years.
That is a long time.
That's a very long time. Yeah. I know that.
That's awesome.
That's very cool.
It seems like it went by fast. And I also consider myself a folk herbalist and a community herbalist. So that's really like where the rest of my work has come out of. I'm also in the process of writing a book about Italian folk medicine, specifically Italian American folk medicine, to be published with Inner Traditions. And really the bulk of what I do right now is what you might call ancestral reclamation, ancestral remembrance, particularly with folks of the Italian American diaspora. So my lineages are, my paternal lineage is Italian and my maternal lineage is Irish, but I was enculturated. I grew up Italian American in an Italian American community. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my work is focused around that.
Those are strong ties though. Like both lineages are really like heavily focused in a lot of folk medicines and herbalism. So makes sense.
Certainly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Certainly.
So we brought Lisa on today to talk a little bit about Italian American folk medicine practices, as well as the Root Circle itself, because it is an amazing business. They have amazing classes. I've taken classes with the Root Circle, and it's one of my favorite experiences so far, in general, I would say, in like the witchy community. To start us off, we have like our little outline, because all our podcast listeners know that me and Matt can't operate without an outline. It's really bad. So we can deviate from the outline, but without an outline,
it goes off the rails. It's awkward.
We end up talking about really weird stuff. So to kind of start us off, the questions that we kind of have is, does the Italian American diaspora have its own set of folk magic? And in what ways is that different than Italian folk magic or different Italian diasporas?
So, yeah, I really am not versed on the other Italian diasporas. I feel like I've had enough conversations with folks of the Canadian Italian diaspora that I think there are a lot of similarities, not as much with the Australian. I think they're dealing with some different conditions than we are here.
I had a conversation with someone who is Italian Australian, I think on Twitter, where they're just now kind of getting back into the saints and Catholicism, and hasn't been very present within their diaspora. And then before, so it was like they were flip-flopped almost between from Italian American and Italian Australian. But that was just one person's experience and family, so it could be very different overall.
So that part I'm not sure. In terms of the other part of the question, is there a difference between Italian folk medicine and Italian American folk medicine?
Yeah,
and absolutely. So, I mean, obviously they're inextricably linked, but basically the Italian immigrants came from Southern Italy, from many different regions of Italy. So and 80% of the immigrants from Italy in the U.S. diaspora are from Southern Italy. So, and that's because of the Risorgimento. So basically the North invaded the South, and it broke up the monarchy there, and more or less dispossessed the peasants, who didn't have much under the monarchy, but they did have access to common land. They lost that. It was really bad for them, very bad economically, and they had no way of sustaining themselves. They couldn't farm anymore because the land was taken by land barons and sold, became private land. So but Southern Italy is a combination of a bunch of different little regions, all with their own dialect and customs.
Oh, okay. I was also wondering, Frankie, you're Southern Italian, aren't you? Okay.
I am, but I am from particularly the region of Calabria. And between like Calabria and Sicily, two different customs. And even in when you're like looking at sociology papers on the different cures or folk medicines between Sicily and Calabria, there's some similarities, but they have differences based on the environment and based on what they have readily available.
Yeah, so my nonno was from Calabria and my nonna from Benevento, which is in the Campania region, which is like, so Benevento is like an hour east of Naples.
Oh, okay.
So those are very all, so Sicily, Calabria, any of those, in every place in between, very different in terms of customs, how they do things, and like I said, language. So they have their thing there. The immigrants came, brought their customs, traditions, culture to the United States, and they largely settled in urban areas. So first of all, they went from rural, mostly rural living, farmers, contadini, to working in factories and living in cities.
I see. That would be a drastic change. I could definitely see that.
Yes. And then they lived in what would be called Italian enclaves. So most, and then there were, you know, obviously this is the general. So there was obviously certainly cases where people didn't do this, but generally speaking. So they were all, everybody from Southern Italy would be living in one neighborhood. So you're bringing together multiple different regions of Italy, almost different countries. Sicily's kind of a different country than the rest of Italy.
I can definitely understand that. A lot of like religious values and differences and all of that, I think we've discussed on here. I'm getting all of this information from all of you guys because I'm just here as the American, Native American.
Right?
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, okay. I'm learning all sorts of stuff today.
Yes. That's right. Who are these people?
I'm like, all right. Hi, y'all.
I mean, my grandma and my great grandma always used to say, like, Sicily's different. Sicily is Italy, but it's not Italy. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? They're like,
it just hits different.
They're Sicilians. Okay. And I'm like, what? I don't understand what this means. But
I do have to laugh because it makes sense, like, in like folklore as well. You always have that one person that's like, they're Sicilian, or that's Sicilian.
Yep, exactly.
I'm like, okay, now I'm getting it. That's like, that would be for us, like, it's the Navajos over there. All right. It's them. All right. They're great. They're fantastic. Long history shortened. I'm Hopi. So
specifically for the Hopi tribe,
Navajo would be our like rival individuals. So that's very specific, I guess.
Yeah. But we had that. So my neighborhood school, there's many other Italian kids, and we always were like, they're Sicilian, you know, like so-and-so is Sicilian, you know, so not in a bad way, but just sort of like, you know, I don't know.
So what did some of the like internalized beliefs started ending up being? I know that you were saying that they moved into these drastically new environments. So like, what do you hold on to that drives you forward?
Well,
that happens.
Yeah. So, I mean, they clung together, but you had a lot of mixing and matching. So in terms of like folk medicine, you have traditions that were coming together, right? Mm-hmm. So in a community, whereas like you may be, if you went to a village in say Calabria, you're going to have one specific way of doing things across the whole village. In say the neighborhood that I grew up in, you've got several different nonas with these, and usually it was nonas, not always, but usually with these skills, say, and they're going to be doing them all differently. So, you know, I learned different ways of, say, like doing a Malocchio cure. Some people do it with oil and water. Some people just do it with words. There's different signs that go with them. So they may have mixed and matched and combined. And then the other thing is that they didn't have the same tools, so to speak. They didn't have the same, they didn't have access to the same things. Like they couldn't run out to the chicken coop and grab an egg necessarily, you know, or you know, they might not have a certain type of oil. They might not have a certain type of herb. So, and it's the same with our cooking and our recipes. We all the immigrants had to adapt to what they had available to them. So, you know, it changed, which is what traditions are supposed to do.
Oh, absolutely. They're supposed to become variety and grow just like any other community-based anything. So I'm going to take it that it just became a lot more of a communal basis of magic, because from what I'm understanding, a lot of times it used to be very family and independent. And now here in the Americas, it kind of seems like they would have to band together and it would have to become much more communal as a practice.
Well, you're going from one type of communal to another.
Okay.
So a village is also very communal, but it's more homogeneous.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's, you know, related.
Everybody's around. That's my uncle.
Yeah, exactly.
Twice removed.
Yes.
Whole nine yards. So now all of a sudden you're all kind of stuck in apartments. So you're trying to like.
In different dialects, people didn't even speak the same, you know, they didn't speak English and they didn't speak the same dialect.
Wow, that would be, so they really had to just trust and hope for the best.
Yes.
So adding on, we talk a little bit, I know in, at least in my kind of working with Reconnection and studying Italian and Italian-American folk magic, the belief of kind of Malocchio is something that is very much a drive. Would you say that you find that also to be true, or would you say that that's kind of takes a backseat to other beliefs or superstitions, quote unquote?
What do you mean by a drive? Like as a center? Like as a
like as a center, because for me, I guess it always seems, and this is, you know, as someone who's only about a year or 2 years into their Reconnection journey, it seems like the belief of the evil eye and the belief of Malocchio is kind of something that is at the center of the folk magic, along with other things too.
It's definitely big, you know, I mean, I think it's, but I don't know if I'd say it's at the center. In fact, it to me, so from my like direct experience, I would say it was just like kind of like one of those things that people did. It wasn't something that anybody really talked about.
Yeah.
So here's an example. My friend, one of my best friends growing up, her Nona did the Malocchio cure. And you know, just one day my friend had a baby. And her Nona called her, or I can't remember if she visited her first or whatever. Then her Nona called and said, "He has the Malocchio. You got to get down here because we got to do this." You know what I mean? So like, yeah. And then my friend was kind of like, "Well, I guess I got to go, you know?"
Yeah.
How can I say no? But like it wouldn't have been any more of a discussion than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just all part of it. I think there's a lot. So it's just one aspect. And I think it gets sort of centered now for reasons that I don't really know if I understand.
It tends to get centered in anthropological and sociological papers, in my opinion. And this is from like reading a lot of it. And I often find that because anthropologists are kind of, or ethnographers are going in and looking for an understanding of a community that has a lot going on and understanding the folk medicine. And a lot of times when they're looking at the folk medicine, what they see is Malukyo. And then they don't really see the other parts of it that include the saints or ancestors or community. And so that's just my opinion and experience.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. It gets talked about a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, so some of it is, so if you have something wrong, mm-hmm. so say you weren't feeling well, you know, often it's a headache, something was off. You kept breaking things or tripping or something's happening in the house. That would be like the first, it's often going to be the first thing that you're going to do. You're going to be like, oh, let's check for the maloke, right? Mm-hmm. So that's part of it. So, but the same type of method that we use for the maloke could be used for a variety of different things.
Yeah.
So okay. Belly aches, mm-hmm. you know, San Anthony's fire, they call it. So there's a whole bunch of things, and so the evil eye is just one of the potential maladies that you could have that would be treated.
Mm-hmm. So a little off topic, but I've been so curious for the longest time, and no one's given me a really clear answer. When does it stop becoming the evil eye? When does it stop becoming El Malocchio? Because you're talking about like stomach aches not being Malocchio, but also like headaches are Malocchio.
That's the thing. You just do you don't know.
You do
the Malocchio. Usually you're gonna do the Malocchio first and be like okay.
So it's Malocchio until proven otherwise.
Exactly. I mean, I do the cure first, and if that doesn't work, I move on to doing something else. And then if that doesn't work, it's like, it's the first course of action.
Yes.
I mean, Matt, you texted me the other day, and I had a protection spell go like nuts, like it was all over the oven. And Matt was like, have you done your Malocchio cure recently? And I'm like, you know what, Matt? I haven't. But well, that feels
very pointed to me, because that's a protection spell going way off rye. So that's why I was like,
I put too much olive oil on it. All right. It turned into a torch. That was the problem.
I often do that with too much patchouli, which is hilarious because I hate patchouli. Like, apparently it's either all or nothing with me and that stupid herb. So.
Oh, man. But yeah, I mean, I even think of terms of like vermicures, which are kind of like, or like unbindings, which have a very particular name that isn't coming to mind. But like similar methods for different things, or like invidia, like envy. These are all things that you would like do similar cures for, or similar like healings, but I usually start with the olive oil and the water, and that's, I go from there, because I like to get on my bases, but that's just me.
And I would say that's generally it. You're just going to mm-hmm. start with that usually. If something's off, then you're going to try it. You're going to do that. And then if that doesn't work, then, you know, you're going to try other things.
You try something else.
Yeah.
But let's, that is actually something that I want to talk about though, because like we go from this really solid Italian identity with all of this. When does the Americanization really start? Like, when do we have a equilibrium between becoming that diasporic Italian American and just being an Italian who's trapped in America?
Well, I mean, there's not a line. It's not like you go from being Italian to Italian. It's not like, I mean, it's a spectral progression. It's a continuum. Oh, so, you know, to say, I mean, I think this is some of the big question right now that all of us doing ancestral work and ancestral reclamation are asking. And I don't have the answer, but, you know, when do you just become American? And do you ever just become American? I mean, and what even is American? And then if you are Americanized and you don't have contact with your ancestral culture, is there a way that you can track back? Well, they're your ancestors, so of course, but that's not going to automatically enculturate you as an Italian. So, mm-hmm. so then it's like, what does it mean to be part of a culture? And so it's like, well, culture is an ancestry, right? Mm-hmm. It's not genetic.
Yeah. It's
a living, raised, breathing, moving, yes, thing.
It's a core belief of yourself and others. It's communal. So what I guess I was just kind of interested, because like we talk about Italian American folk practices, where did we finally find ourselves more into having that kind of differentiate? Because nowadays there's the Italian American diasporic folk magic versus Italian folk magic. I'm just kind of curious on to like, where did a lot of that like blending happen? I'm just curious as to where we got it.
Through generations. So the Italian practices from Southern Italy, mm-hmm, continue to be passed down, but to people who were born here, whose native language is English, who have been conditioned by American values, mm-hmm, by
American values is always such a fun one to me, because I'm like, what do you mean? What?
Well, that's a big question too, is what is what are American values? And my opinion is that America is inherently capitalist and inherently white supremacist. So then when we're conditioned into that, there's a level of needing to unlearn it.
There's a lot more individualism.
Yes.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. That's for sure.
So, like if you're part of an Italian family, you're not an individual. You're part of a whole bunch of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's hard. So for instance, my generation, so I'm 52. So
you don't look 52.
Tell you, I was going to say,
I so absolutely. Like my very first thing, I was like, no, you're not.
You're not, trust me. <You're not. laughs> I feel it. But so I was born in 1970. And so I grew up in an Italian American family. And when you're part of an Italian American family, every decision that you make is, you have to consider everybody in the family. You represent your family in all social situations. If you do something wrong, you get in trouble. That's a shame to your whole entire family. So I rebelled against a lot of that, because the Anglo friends that I had, they were, you know, not, they didn't, they could be more independent. Their parents, their grandparents, their aunts and uncles, all their cousins weren't constantly abreast of everything that they did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was in my ancestral village this summer, which is a really small village in Calabria. And I don't know, maybe there's 400 or 500 people. And I really got a taste of it there. The being part of a village. And I could feel my Americanness being annoyed that, like, I couldn't even walk down to my car without three old ladies wanting to know where I was going, why I was going by myself, how I was. They'd be like, you know, you're driving?
And well, to be honest, I would also ask why you're going anywhere by yourself in New York. So, like, but that's just me.
So we've been, so as the generations go along, we're Americanized, right?
Yeah.
We're not used to.
So now I have like a really big question that I don't think we've ever really asked. Do you feel intrinsically more powerful or more like complete when you are part of your Italian practice? Or does it feel like something's missing when you go to that village, you practice those practices, but you don't get to have that American individualism? Is there a point where those folk practices don't feel right, or like you're not more complete in your practice because you're looking at two very separate ways of looking at life.
No, because my folk practice is based on where I am.
Okay.
That's right now. Okay.
So when you're in the village, you feel the communal is much more inviting to you, and you don't have that, like, because I guess for me personally, like, when you're indigenous, there's the red road, there's the indigenous path. It's supposed to be like, no matter where you go, you bring your indigeneity with you. So somewhere where that would be way off the wall would feel very foreign to me, and like it's taking away from my practice in some aspects. So it's just interesting to hear that, like, it almost melds depending on where you are at that very moment in time.
Yeah, that is a really interesting question. And yeah, so I'm not sure I fully understand the question, but like when I'm in my ancestral village, I'm still like the whole of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm still an American.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's interesting? Oh, here's an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a nearby village visiting some friends, and they don't have anybody in their village that could do the Malocchio cure, and they asked me to do it.
That wow. seems way off. That's
because
cool.
The traditions died out, have been dying, have been, they're losing it there as well as they yeah. have been
wow.
here. Right? So I'm not, still not 100% sure I understood your question or that I answered you.
I think in some aspects you did. Mainly my question is like, when you are like in a place where it's more communal place, right? Like you're in Italy, you were talking about how it's very, the village, the community, the family. And then when we talk about the American aspects of things, it's very individualized and yada, yada, yada. Does the experience of having like community all around you, your ancestral place, does that feel more empowering, or does like some aspect of that get taken away when you're not in your American mindset or your American experience? Like when you're diasporic, you have that American aspect with you all the time.
Yes.
So does it feel wrong or different or awkward when you're in a space that is very not American?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, I can feel, I know I'm American, but I feel like I really belong there as well because everybody knows me.
That's awesome.
Some people, they think they knew my no-no, you know, I mean, I you know, like,
well, oh, and I really hope I'm not like sounding like I'm grilling you. I was just actually,
oh, no,
really
no, 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 go for it. Grill me all you want. I love
okay. it. no, I always feel like I'm like coming off like really aggressive, and I'm like, I promise that's not my intention.
No, I don't. No, 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 no. You can't. No, no. This is good. You can ask me all the questions you want. It's a good question, but no, I feel like I belong there, but I don't feel. And my family's there. My family's in the piazza. We're having cafe and we're visiting, and then people are stopping to talk to me. They like it when people come back to their village. Mm-hmm. No, I don't. I mean, I don't lose my American identity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
and
like
you don't feel like you're missing that connection either, like while you're there.
The connection to
the diasporic folk practice, because in a lot of ways of
no folk because practice, the folk practice is a thing that's like a it's personal is...
That's very fair. Okay, like that's where I'm getting at, like when you are embedded into a certain culture, right, those values get intrinsically put onto you. So when you are taken out of one type of culture pretty much completely and then put into a different one, I was wondering if that makes
they're not
your
that
practice
different,
feel...
though. That's the other thing. So they're okay. not, they're like iterations of each other.
Then that feels much more like the answer. Yeah. Cause I'm like sitting there going like, if I just got pulled out of here, went straight to like England,
it's always like...
I would be like, I don't know.
Well,
what
I feel that way in England too.
England.
Or it Scotland, feels like, even. I'm like, I'm Scottish, but not that Scottish.
You know, it'd be like me going, like if I went to Poland, but I'm guessing that even in Poland, I'd probably be able to find old nonas that
yeah.
had to do.
You probably would.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. I was going to say, because one part of my family is Austrian-Hungarian, but farther back than Italian, if I went there, I'd feel out of place because I don't know anything and I don't have any connection with it. But I was raised in a family that had Italian tradition still kind of in it. So I'm more familiar with that area. I'll say Italian-American traditions because Feast of the Seven Fishes was very big.
And I think that's exactly like where I'm kind of like the question is. It's like, when do you just feel so out of place that it literally affects your folk practice? Or is it always going to be like, do we finally have a communal love, understanding, and learning this that no matter where we go, it's going to come with us? Or do we lose something when we transfer to these new places?
I think we gain.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think even if you haven't been in your ancestral land in generations, when you go there, there's always some part of your epigenetic or memory, your ancestral memory, that gets turned on and you feel a sense of belonging. I've been to Ireland too. And, you know, I didn't learn, other than, you know, the very Catholic practices that I learned from my Irish side. But, you know, I don't know much about their folk medicine or witchcraft. But when I was in Ireland, like, everything lit up. I could feel all of it.
I'm so sorry to just throw us completely off. I was just really like thinking we talk about regional so much that we're like, we're always like in our region. We're always in our practice, like, here. I don't hear a lot of people going from their, you know, ancestral home directly into a brand new deer way of life.
Yeah, but that's not so with like being in Italian diaspora and then going back to Italy is like you're making a circle.
Okay.
Right. That's, so like you're not. So these were place based folk traditions are place based. They emerge out of the ecology of a place. Absolutely. And then they moved. So like Italy kind of spread itself out and then did certainly take root here, but going back is like you're sewing things together. So it just adds to it.
That's a great way of explaining it too, is sewing things together.
That is a really cool way of explaining it.
Add on, so I feel like we talked through a lot of the last questions, but I do want to talk a little bit about what you do with the root circle, especially in your Della Medicina courses, if you would like to share.
Yes, I want to hear about this.
Yeah, so the courses that I offer are about working with ancestral plants, because part of how I sort of came into my ancestral work was through my plant work. Because I began noticing that my ancestral plants were sort of resonating with me in a way that was different than other plants. And my teacher, when I first began noticing this, who was Pam Montgomery, she said, oh, it's because it's an ancestral plant. It's turning on your ancestral memories, the taste, the smell of the plant, and then beginning to form a relationship with those plants, which of course I had relationships with some ancestral plants my whole entire life, but I was beginning to do it intentionally.
Oh yeah. It slaps different when you're actually like trying.
Right. So part of what I offer is connection for other folks. And my courses are open to folks outside of, they're open to everybody, but usually folks in the Italian diaspora are the ones that show up. But and so we work with plants. We work with various ancestral plants in a variety of different ways. So there's two. There's Della Medicina 1, and that's just like a quick kind of sort of almost introductory. It gets people to start thinking about ways that they can work with plants, and we practice that. And then Della Medicina 2 is where we go more in depth with it.
So when you're doing these, is it like more herbalism based, or is it more spiritual? And I know those two are very much one in the same, but are you more medicine based or are you more spiritual healing based? in these courses?
It's really both. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like we bring it together. It's integrated.
That sounds really cool. That actually sounds like a lot of fun. Frankie has talked about how fun a lot of those courses were. So it's nice to meet the person behind it all. Are you mostly in New York based, or I'm taking it, it's a lot of online courses? Yeah.
Yeah, I was. So before the pandemic, mostly I was in person. Mm-hmm. And then once the pandemic happened, I switched to Zoom, and it took quite a little bit of adjustment, and now I actually like it.
Hey, I love the idea of getting to stay home and work. I mean, yeah. Remote is the way to do it, right? You're comfortable, yeah. You're in your yeah. element.
I mean, I feel like the in-person piece is, I feel kind of like it, we're lacking something when we're not in person. Like, mm-hmm. I wish there was a way to be in person with everybody.
It's certainly hard to have spirit over the internet. That's definitely.
I mean, I'm surprised how much you can, though. Like, I was like, wow, like, things really happen. Like, it's pretty amazing. Even, like, the way the groups sort of, they come together. There's a lot of coherence that happens.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
So it's all right. I'm grateful for it, really.
Where can we find it? Your courses. Yeah.
Okay, so also mentioned that I'm doing, there's two other courses. So I have Della Medicina 1 and Della Medicina 2. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the process of writing a book. Those are at therootcircle.com. And so I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know when I'm going to be running those again. I'm in the midst of a Della Medicina 2 course that goes until, I think, February. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to be teaching in Sicily.
That sounds so cool.
That's so cool.
Sorry, I just like the idea of getting to so I'm Colorado native, never been, I don't go anywhere. So anytime everyone's like talking about Italy, I'm like, that sounds like fun.
You can go.
Yeah, I'll take you with me when I finally get a trip planned.
I'll get in a backpack. I'll be your carry-on.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry. Continue talking.
That sounds very uncomfortable.
We'll just, I'll just like apply.
Squished in those little seats.
Yeah, no, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine. We'll figure it out. So that's for Botanico Sacro, which is a, sacred plants, mm-hmm. with, Radici Siciliana, which is, Mary Beth Bonfilio's, pilgrimages. So Mary Beth Bonfilio does, two or three pilgrimages a year to Sicily. Mm-hmm. It's not a tour. It's like, we're going to be really in place doing plant stuff and some mm-hmm. stuff with some local healers. So that, and then also, in collaboration with Mary Beth Bonfilio, I am going to be doing a year long, like, practitioner, circle that is called Filo Santo. And that is based in Italian. That's going to be specifically for folks who are wanting to become or are Italian folk practitioners.
That's so cool.
Is that held in Italy too?
No, that's going to be online. So that came out of Mary Beth and I talking with other folks and, you know, so we have this folk tradition that was transmitted in a very specific way in the villages and in the enclaves, mm-hmm. in a way that was oral, that was, between, an elder and a younger, basically. Mm-hmm. And, that means, and there's social contracts involved and, so that way is not really happening anymore. And so how do we keep like the ethics of the tradition intact, but then continue to make it accessible mm-hmm. to people?
You guys are running into the ultimate folklore question. This is the as a folklorist question. That is what we folklore is like my biggest thing. And that is, you are literally nailing it on the head. Where do we continue to keep the ethics and the morality of these traditional practices, but bring them into an accessible 2022?
Like, how do we transmit the intactness of a tradition that was orally transmitted between very specific people in the community? So the other thing is, like, it wasn't like everybody in the village didn't learn how to do the Malokia cure. It was just, you know, certain people in certain families. It like, it wasn't for mass consumption, you know? And so it's like, and we're in this, like, we're in this place where a lot of information is exchanged on a mass scale, like on social media, which is like, okay. I always say this. I'm like, you know, so I'm also an astrologer.
And love that.
So my astrology teacher, and I started that about the same time I started herbs. So, you know, it was like 1992.
Frankie and I found out we're not astrologers. We just had.
No, when you're not.
Oh, it was so funny because we did an After Dark episode with an astrologer where they were just giving us terms and watching us try to figure it out. It went as expected.
Oh, that sounds really bad.
Wait, was that a podcast episode?
It will come
out. It's not out yet, but it should be out soon. It's really fun because...
Who was the astrologer?
Their name is Warrior Witch Nike. They've kind of fallen off the internet recently, but they're like coming back slowly to YouTube. And they started with really easy ones, a few of which I guessed like easy. And then they got into, what was it? Moon something?
I have no, I don't remember it. But I remember
it was like
that
the was moon like, does something. And I'm like, I ordered a pizza. I was like, I don't know any of this. I give up. It's very fun. It'll be out soon.
All right. I'm looking forward to that one. Yeah.
Yeah, it was not terrible.
So what I was saying was, like, my astrology teacher, so we did it all by hand with a calculator and logarithms, right? This is before there were no computers.
Oh, you went like old school.
Well, there wasn't. There just wasn't. It wasn't like an option, y'all.
Oh yeah. Can't go old school because literally it's just called school.
So my astrology teacher was like, never give anybody your birth information, right? Like that.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Now I'm like, you go on the kids are like, they're just, everybody's given everybody their birth information. Like everybody's like immediately, like they've got it on their bio. It's like my rising, my sun and my moon sign. Like, so I'm like also so there's also the part of like, okay, so the future is happening, right? So like we're moving into like this high tech, like way of exchanging information. Social media is one of the main ways that people do it. And I think in a way it's good because it really does like kind of flatten the playing field, right? Everybody has access to it. So it's like good in a way. And then in another way, it's like not good because there's just no like discernment happening. And, you know, I don't know, maybe that's harmful. Maybe it isn't, but that's not even the point. The point is that it's not the thing, right? Like it's not. So like,
it's not what was done for ages and ages.
Folk healing is relational.
Bar Tolkien, folklorist actually brought it up as a really good point in some of his writing. And he was talking about mochi. We'll just use it as an example, right? There is going to be a certain amount of care, and you'll realize what's the commercialized versus what is just proper variant turning into the new tradition. He brought this up by going, mochi is everywhere now because of the invention of a machine that will make the rice for you. The mochi pays for you. But there will always be a very important aspect of learning the traditional method of creating with the hammer and the ceremonial. And so I know that part of you might be worried about kind of this, you know, commercialization of spirituality. But I think ultimately, when you teach in a way that is very from heart and very from tradition, you're ultimately going to forward the practice no matter what you do. I think that you shouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. That's interesting. And I like how you called it a variant, because it really is. It's like, and I think the other part of it is that we have to understand that traditions are meant to be modified.
Mm-hmm. They're meant to grow just with
They're
the community.
They're meant to grow. And so like this, whatever this is going to become, this Italian folk magic or medicine that was brought by originally by the Italian immigrants, is rooted here in the United States, and it's going to take a shape here. And what we want to do with Filo Santo is exactly what you said. It's like, how do we like cultivate this in a way that does just what you said, like really gets to the, that comes out, that the heart comes out of it, so that and you know, I don't think anybody knows where it's going to go. I don't think we need to. I think we just have to like be where we are.
It's spirituality. We're just gonna let it happen. What happens happens. If it goes well, great. If not, well.
Do you have any final thoughts, anything else you wanted to add to this episode? I think this was like one of our best episodes that we've recorded in a while. We had some really great conversations and a lot of good things were talked about, and I love when that happens, so I'm feeling good.
I've decided that it's because I was eating Indian food. I refuse to believe that.
Matt's got garlic naan. He's happy.
That's it. That's all I need.
I'm happy. We're good. Everyone's happy.
No, I'm good too. So this is great. This is great. So thanks for having me.
Also, where can we find you in like a general note? Like
social media or like anything like that.
Well, I'm on Instagram. Cool. I think it's at the Root Circle. I'm on Facebook. I don't do as much there. Most of my social media is happening on Instagram. Mm-hmm.
You may be the very first person to suggest that we look on Facebook for you.
Really? I know none of the kids are on. You guys are all none of the kids.
I have a page. I just don't go on there.
I have four children. So my oldest is, God, he is 32, I think.
Okay.
And 32 or 30. He was born in 1989. Mm-hmm. So that's my oldest. So, and then I have 31 and then 28 and then 20.
Yeah, they're all kids. It's fine.
They're all kids. But they're, you know, they're like, Mom, nobody's on Facebook.
I mean, it's kind of true. It's a little true. It's a little true.
They keep me up. I mean, I'm hopeless. That's what they say anyway. I'm hopeless. But, you know.
Nah, nobody hopeless. The internet's for anybody. Man. But so Instagram at the Root Circle.
Instagram at the Root Circle. And then I do have a website, therootcircle.com. Okay. But if you're on Instagram, everything that gets publicly posted goes on there.
Mm-hmm. I will link everything as well in our description so people can just click and go and see what you're doing.
Great.
But yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. It was lovely to talk with you. And then we're going to do our little outro. This has been Books and Broomsticks. I'm Chaotic Witchot.
And I'm Matt Hatter Plays.
Lisa Fazio.
And we will talk to you guys next week.